Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to Life's a Pitch. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Don Fifield of The Guardian and Tom Hopkinson of The People. Down in the deep, something stirs. Sunderland and Big Sam come out fighting. Newcastle finally remember who they're playing for. Suddenly, relegation isn't cut and dried. Neither's the title or the top four come to that. It's FA Cup semi-final week, the biggest week in the managerial career of Roberto Martinez. Who's your player of the year? We'll tell you ours. But first, life at the bottom. Have Norwich blown it, Dom?
They've made life particularly hard for themselves, let's put it like that. They could well be in the bottom three the next time they play, and that's away at Arsenal. And I just think Saturday psychologically was hugely damaging to them. Probably similarly to the game at Palace the week before when they got beaten as well. The same old problems are affecting their play. They have quite pretty approach play, quite nice creative players in Naismith, Jarvis on the wings. But the reality is they don't take the chances they create. And without Tim Close at the back, they're vulnerable. And that was a particularly damaging defeat, 3-0.
Goal scorers, you know, we always say worth their weight in gold. Now, that might not be a great deal when Jermaine Defoe is concerned because of his size, but you know, he's the sort of guy that you need in this situation, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of question marks when Jermaine Defoe went to Sunderland in the first place, weren't there, when he came back from playing in the MLS. But, you know, what a masterful signing that has been. I know it wasn't always easy for him because of the formations that Sunderland have liked to play over the last, particularly the last year or so. But since Big Sam's come in, you know, he really knows how to get the best out of him. And, you know, I said probably a month ago that I felt that Sunderland, of the three teams that were still battling relegation, Sunderland, Norwich and Newcastle, Sunderland were the ones with the best chance of staying up, purely because, you know, back then you would be looking at Jermaine Defoe thinking, well, he's got a chance of getting you 4, 5, 6 goals. He's certainly well on the way to that. Another contribution at the weekend, and you know, with 4 games to go for Sunderland, if he can pop up with another couple, that could for me be the difference between them staying up and Newcastle and Norwich going down.
And Sam, you know, getting involved, you know, physically on the touchline, that shows you there's a mood change there.
Yeah, it was almost like a show of unity, wasn't it? Getting stuck into Cameron Jerome quite early on, I think 3rd minute, wasn't it? I just look at Sunderland, they're a bit more streetwise, certainly more streetwise than Norwich, and quite possibly from Newcastle as well. They're used to being down there. They're used to getting out of that situation as well. Mm. We one other player that played well Saturday was Fabio Barini. Go back 2 years, Barini was the one who was integral to their rise out of the bottom three under Poyet, when they winning at Chelsea and inflicting Jose Mourinho's first league defeat at Stamford Bridge. These guys have been there before and they know how to get out of that situation. You know, it was a much more hopeless situation 2 years ago than it is now. They feel they've got a bit of momentum going for them, and, you know, they're an awkward side to play against.
I think the players will have looked across at Big Sam getting involved in that ruck at the start as well. And when you see your manager fighting like that, it makes you, you know, galvanised, and you want to get behind him. And the other player that we must mention as well, who derided, you know, I was certainly amongst those laughing at his debut, Kershaw, when
he came in at
Tottenham. He was he just had a howler. Came on for about half an hour. The game changed. I think they were 1-0 down when he came on, something like that, and ended up losing 4. Was it? You know, but he was just awful. There was an own goal, there were mistakes to give away a penalty. But I have to say, now playing him in that defensive midfield role, he's come in and he's almost brought a little bit of the Munich. You know, he's almost that statuesque kind of player that he's still carrying. The fact that he's a Bayern Munich player, or has been a Bayern Munich player, in him, you know, and I think that's really working for Sunderland. And Catamol as well, feeding off him at the weekend. Catamol was excellent, and that's again that goes to say why I think.
Are we ever in danger of overplaying managerial significance? You know, I think we like Sam because he's a colourful character. I heard a fantastic story about him when he was at Preston, and they won promotion, and it was a lad's holiday in Spain. And the highlight of this holiday was him having a sumo fight, basted in suntan oil and just a little thong on, which is an awful image. And he lost the fight, and they buried him up to his neck. But that was sort of central to his legend at that club. Do we actually overplay how important Sam is to Sunderland?
No, I don't think so. He's never been relegated. And as soon as he comes in, you can see what he's trying to do. He's a bit like Tony Pulis. I mean, it might be managerial basics, but certain managers are better at organising back lines and defensive midfielders than others. Others stick to different kinds of principles and attacking principles. But, you know, when you're in a crisis, you want somebody who has a track record of keeping you up. And I think Allardyce brings that streetwise, you know, street fighting quality to your team in the same way that Pulis does. And you know, if you look at the managers down there, I mean, Benitez has no real experience of this. Alex Neil is 34, and he's, you know, competing in the Premier League for the first time, so he has no real experience of this as a manager. Allardyce has got the track record.
And Rafa, you know, they're playing Manchester City on Tuesday night. They've lost their last 12 games against them. You know, this whole thing about momentum, I know it's quite intangible sometimes. Do you expect them to win that?
No. No, the slightest. I mean, I was at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. We'll come back to Manchester City, you know, later in the programme. But they were excellent. And Newcastle, what I do think, I mean, it showed great character at the weekend, knowing that Sunderland had gone out and recorded that 3-0 victory, really laid down a marker. And for Newcastle to go out and record a victory of the same scoreline, I thought that said a lot about the character that Rafa has now instilled in that group of players. And I think it's been great to hear Lascelles come out in the last week and have a go at everyone within the club.
Really unusual in a young player.
Was he 22, 23? Yeah. And to have the confidence to come out and do that. But it almost seems like, you know, and he said himself, didn't he, that he expected to get hammered by his teammates for it. But I think that shows great leadership qualities. And you know, he's really one to keep an eye on. If they can avoid the drop, then, you know, it'll be because of characters like him who have come in right at the death and steered them through it.
And decisive selection policy, wasn't it?
I was just going to say, I mean, to have dropped Jonjo Shelvey to the bench to start that game against his former club, and a player that under McLaren, when he joined in January, he was going to be the sort of fulcrum of the side, wasn't he? He was going to be the one that was going to take them to safety. That was a bold move, but I think it reflected also that Newcastle's back line is their Achilles heel. It's porous. And the reality is they need two combative midfielders in front of them. I know Shelvey came off the bench second half. The reality is that was the bare minimum that Newcastle had. They had to win that game. Yeah. They targeted Swansea, the Palace game and the Villa game at home. They have to win those three. And then somewhere on the line, they have to end this abysmal away form or get a result against Manchester City and then hope that proves enough over Sunderland and Norwich.
Yeah, and they've got Liverpool on Saturday as well, who are, you know, they're flying as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, they've had a great week, haven't they? I mean, to get the result they did against Dortmund, I was one of those who flicked the telly on at 3-1, saw the score and thought, oh, I'm not going to bother with that, and regretted it about 20 minutes later when the alert came through on my phone to say they'd gone through. Incredible achievement against one of the best sides in Europe, and then to then change the side as he did and bring in all the youngsters to play Bournemouth. I mean, I've seen Bournemouth a fair bit this season, and make no mistake, that's not an easy place to go down there to Dean Court and get a result like that, particularly for such an inexperienced group of players. So they really will use the momentum that came from the victory over Dortmund, and yeah, they're going to be a very tough team for anyone who faces them. And of course, there's still the outside chance of a top four finish for Liverpool, isn't there, which will be driving them on.
What about the broader picture at Newcastle, Dom? You know, they were absolutely slaughtered in that court case last week. Really important questions posed about almost like the moral vacuum at the heart of the club because of the way they treated Jonas. What was your view on that?
Well, it's just hard to fathom how any employer could treat an employee quite like that. Even if you're arguing that a business decision, they didn't want to activate the ear purely on his playing ability, I think certain situations call for some compassion and support in the right way.
Here's a man undergoing chemotherapy for cancer.
Yeah, and he scored on the last day of last season to keep them up. Let's not forget. I mean, he was one of the scorers against West Ham. And he's a local hero, one of the few that Newcastle have celebrated as a support player.
Well, they chanted his name on Saturday, didn't they?
Well, I think that says it all. It says it all. And the series of tweets that Gutierrez put out on the adjudication, I mean, quite frankly, you could feel that the emotion in the tweet, if that's possible, in 140 characters.
Yeah.
But I mean, well, look, to be honest, he's playing for Deportivo La Coruña in La Liga. He's best off out of that club with those owners, and I would suggest that possibly Newcastle are missing him.
It didn't show any common sense, did it? I mean, let's not pretend Newcastle are the first club ever to say to a player, look, you know, there's a clause in your contract that says once you've made 50 appearances for us, you get a pay rise. We can't afford to do it. You're going to sit on the bench.
It's happening with Rob Green's
the case in point, isn't he? Yeah, you know, and so that goes on in football. We'd be naive to think that it doesn't. But, you know, to know what Gutierrez was going through and everything like that, you know you're opening up. You're leaving yourself wide open to a barrage of criticism, and it just was handled very, very poorly from everyone at the
club. What do you think the end game is for Mike Ashley?
That was a great question. I mean, I just don't know. You know, I mean, he said, I think he's on record, isn't he, as saying that he'd been better off never buying the club in the first place. I mean, look, the end game for any multimillionaire, and I'm not speaking with any experience of being one, but the end game you would imagine is to make more and more money and to be in the Premier League when this incredible TV rights deal kicks in. As things stand, Newcastle are going to do very, very well to be there, and it's going to cost Mike Ashley a lot of money to get the club back up to that level. But until he gets somebody to come in and give him the sort of money that will pay off everything he's invested. I mean, let's not make any mistakes about Mike Ashley. He has invested in the club, not necessarily at the right times, but he has put a lot of his own money into it over the last few years. And yes, there have been lots of mistakes that he's made along the way as well. But I think until someone comes in and offers him the sort of money that he feels will see him make a few quid, not necessarily make the fortune that he perhaps hoped to, then I don't see him going anywhere.
Different dimension to an absolutely similar problem at Aston Villa, where Randy Lerner turned off the tap long ago. When we look at relegation finally confirmed, we knew it was coming for weeks, if not months. What is actually going on at a club like that? It just seems to have completely imploded.
Yeah, and they've only sort of belatedly realised by the look of things. I mean, they have probably made the right decisions in terms of the board and the structure, that in terms of the hierarchy that will take them into the Championship, and that will give them a platform to rebuild. But they're not going to be able to rebuild with those same players. Too many bridges have been burnt with those players. I mean, Julian Lescott's quotes post-match
relegation's taken a weight off our shoulders.
Let's give the fans something they deserve over the last four games, that being Championship football next season. It's you may have said it on the spur of the moment in a post-match interview where wasn't quite thinking through what he was saying, but the lack of common sense and awareness in those summed it up, really. And he'll never repair that with the support.
It's beyond repair anyway, Julian Lescott's relationship with them. I mean, I was at Villa Park for the City game a few weeks ago, and his own fans are singing about him having a new car and booing him. Brad Guzan is getting booed as well. Yeah. There are players coming on as substitutes getting booed for sins of the last few weeks and the season that's just gone. It's a toxic atmosphere. You know, you've got thousands and thousands of fans holding up banners, berating the players. It's not a nice place to play football, so they do need a big clear out.
How do you do a clear out like that?
But I don't think you can. I think that's the problem. I think they'll probably be able to get four or five out and maybe bring a couple of kids in from the academy, maybe get a couple of new signings in. I mean, with Lescott's quotes at the weekend, I actually think he was a little bit clumsy rather than there being any malice in it. You know, I just think he's probably trying to say, look, it's been like a long, slow, painful death. We've known it was inevitable. We knew it was coming. And now at least we can get on with focusing on next season and and it's happened now, we can move on.
I think that's what he was trying to say.
But he is damned by that, and he's damned by the car tweet or the car Instagram, whichever it was that he put out.
Moving away from Lescott, look at Agbonlahor.
Well, that's Agbonlahor's even worse for me. It's a good point, Dom. For me, you know, for the club captain.
How can you have a week's holiday in Dubai and then you have to have 2 weeks off at a fit camp?
It's a good holiday
to recover from. You're meant to be a professional athlete. Well, professional is not just about being paid to do something. You've got to actually behave as though your talent means something to you.
You don't. I mean, you can forgive a player. Like, I think Micah Richards was supporters were having a pop at him for taking a holiday as well. Now, I have no problem with players taking holidays. Everyone needs a bit of time. You know, you can't work solidly, and professional athletes train very, very hard over the course of 10 months. You are going. Clubs send players away all the time. Even in the season, they might miss a game. They might send them away for a few days just to recharge. But to go away and be pictured out when the club is in the perilous situation it's in, and to be pictured smoking a shisha pipe, it just smacked of unprofessionalism and just a lack of thought and consideration to all those fans and everything that they've gone through from arguably the one player who you would think would understand it.
He's a local lad. He should have been the one that was inspiring that team, the captain. And
interesting, you know, the fans, as you say, Tom, you know, passionate fans at Villa, set the agenda there. Mm. Same thing is really beginning to happen at Everton, isn't it? You know, we said right at the top of the show, it's a huge week for Roberto Martinez, the Liverpool derby, followed by the FA Cup semi-final. He's in peril, isn't he?
He is. He's a victim to the extent that Everton's home form has been abysmal and their away form has been excellent. But the majority of Evertonians are just seeing the home performances. I was at the Palace game last week, and Everton were awful for the first 15, 20 minutes of that match. They couldn't string a pass together. They improved over the course of the game, and they actually ended up feeling as if they achieved something by surviving that second half with 10 men. But for Martinez to come into his post-match duties and claim that was perfect timing to put in a performance like that was baffling. And I'm just one of these people that can't cope anymore with this endless positivity.
He's a victim of his own positivity, isn't he? And, you know, word. For all those
but
times...
It's parroted, isn't it? I look at him and I say, look, where's the substance?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and that's the point. You know, there have been games when he's come off and everyone else has thought that they've been woeful. And rather than actually say it, he's tried to look for the positives in it, tried to talk it up. And, of course, now, you know, whenever there isn't, or when he does come out and say, look, we actually did quite well there, which, you know, I was at the Palace game with Dom and the Everton fans there were no murmurs from them because they could see the work rate and the commitment had been there, and particularly when MacArthur got sent off. You know, they actually played well and were well deserving of their point. So when he does come out and say that's a good point, people are just like, well, it's just Martinez being positive again, and you know, it's plastering over
and
the cracks.
You look at the form guide and they haven't won for 6 Premier League games.
Yeah, and the run has been dismal, and the reality is that is a squad with so much talent. It should, and everybody looks at what Leicester have achieved, you know, what Spurs are doing, what West Ham are doing, and that Everton squad should be up there competing with them. They've got the quality to do it. They've got Barkley, they've got Lukaku scoring 20 goals for them, and they've got John Stones at the back. They've got up and down the spine of that team. Even McCarthy's a great player when he's fit. Okay, they've suffered occasionally from injuries, as everybody has, but they've underachieved horrendously. And if they win the FA Cup and finish mid-table, then you know, they have taken something tangible out of the season, a trophy, the first one since 1995. But go out the semi-finals and finish mid-table, that's bordering on a disastrous season for Everton, really, given the talent in that squad. And even with the new majority shareholder at the club, or major shareholder at the club, you can see players leaving, in which case they've missed an opportunity with this talented squad.
Well, look, I mean, Lukaku, for one, you just cannot see from everything that's coming out. You know, when the player's agent and dad and brother are not talking and saying things about who he would like to play for, where they'd like to see him play without his say-so.
I'm hoping one step down from a come-and-get-me plea, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And also, you know, we're hearing a lot of talk about Pellegrini's name being mentioned with Everton. As I said, it's a key week. If they lose and lose badly to Liverpool in the derby, They will have been in no fit state then to prepare for Man U, will they?
No, I mean, they need a good result in that derby, regardless of, you know, taking that game in isolation and not even thinking about what's coming up in the next few weeks. They have to do it, because if they go into the derby game and surrender meekly to Liverpool, then everything that Martinez is feeling at the moment, you can ramp that up tenfold.
Mm. What about Man United? Very interesting how Louis van Gaal has almost like pitched his wagon or attached his wagon to Marcus Rashford. Does he believe in youth, or is this just a nice byproduct, a bit of desperation?
I don't think it's been a strategy. I think at the beginning of the season, you know, having spent £200 million in the market, I don't think they're anticipating leaning quite so heavily on what was at the time quite a much maligned academy, actually. Mm. But they could end up proving to be his saviours, strangely. I mean, Van Gaal's season and United's season, every time you think that they've reached the point of no return, they pluck out a result from nowhere that offers hope again of Champions League football or a trophy, and which in some ways is admirable, but I still don't see any long-termism there, really, in terms of the management structure. And the one thing about them, the positive that people will cling from this season, really, is the progress of those kids. And Rashford has been a breath of fresh air. 7 goals in 12. But
would you take him to the Euros?
No. No, I still think he's too raw. I think it's just too soon. And I don't think he brings more quality. I mean, look, 7 goals in 12 games is magnificent. And you know, had England been lacking a goal scorer this season, I would have been tempted. But we're not lacking. You know, it's one position that we're absolutely flying this year. So, no, I would leave him to develop and leave him with the 21s for, you know, a tournament, or give him a couple of years and then say, look, keep doing what you're doing. But what makes me laugh about Van Gaal, he's been very quick to take responsibility for using the youngsters. Wouldn't have got near the team if it had not been for all the injuries United have suffered this year. He just wouldn't have done it. You know, the club is in need of a short-term fix, and you don't rely on youngsters to give you that short-term fix. You know, when we think back to the class of 92, they were brought into the side because it was an evolution, and at the moment United needs more of a revolution.
We can't put it off any longer, Dom. You know, I want to intrude on a little bit of private grief with Palace. You know, a club that's close to your heart, let's put it like that. Would the FA Cup be a short-term fix for Palace this season?
If they won it, if they won it, it would go down as the greatest thing the club has ever achieved. So that can't really be a short-term fix. I think it's probably played a bit of a part in the run they've had since the end of December. It's certainly kept their season going. But I actually think they'll probably go into that game on Sunday in pretty good spirits and pretty good health. I know it's one win on the face of it, it's one win in 18 league games, 17 league games. But they've got enough points in those last four matches, unbeaten matches, to probably not worry so much about relegation anymore. I think they're probably there now. They can achieve that if they get a result at
that's very much
United.
Listen, you're there. That's a Palace fan talking, right?
Well, I have been, believe me, it has been eating away at me for a while. But I think they can go in with and look to express themselves now. I think Wembley might actually suit them and their players. And wide open spaces, big pitch, Bolasie, big goal for him on Sunday because he's been off colour recently. Zaha, cameos recently, but he'll relish going back against Watford, who he's got history against at Wembley. Puncheon's back in form and doing very, very well at the moment. If they had a striker, they'd be upper mid-table very, very comfortably. That striker who's been prolific or has had a run of games. So if they win that FA Cup, it's the greatest thing they've ever achieved. So I don't think it's a short-term fix.
What about Watford?
Well, they've done well, haven't they? I mean, to achieve their safety at this stage of the season, you know, I, when they came up, I thought, well, you'd look at it and everything that Sanchez Flores had to do with that new squad, you know, you looked at it and thought they're going to be hanging on right to the bitter end. And there was a period midway through the season where I think they lost four games on the spin, and you just wondered whether everything that they'd achieved in the first half of the season was going to start coming undone and unravelling. But to give Sanchez Flores his credit, you know, he just galvanised the team, and they've done very, very well.
A massive win for them at the weekend.
It was,
just to keep just above the cut-off, because they would have been, I mean, if they hadn't got that result, they'd been beaten at West Brom and the penalties had gone in, they'd have actually been below Palace going into this game, and they would have been the closest ones to the relegation zone, 38 points.
I think Troy Deeney has been fantastic for them in the way that he's just... is such an influential character. I think he's the best captain in the Premier League.
He is inspirational, absolutely, and he's a, you know, somebody who's turned his life around and has become a talisman for the club, and a club that has. I think if Leicester hadn't achieved what they've done this year, we would be making so much more of what Bournemouth and Watford have done this season. I mean, it has been remarkable, and for the overhaul in the playing staff last summer, and with the managerial coaching staff as well. Deeney's been the constant. He's been the one, the rock in that team. And selfless player. A player that inspires purely by work rate and industry. And he's got a bit of quality too.
Don mentioned Leicester, Tom.
Yeah.
Are we seeing the first cracks in the fairy tale? You know, Jamie Vardy, not just the fact that he got sent off, but his attitude when that happened. They're going to miss him from at least one game, probably more now. Is that okay for them? Can they survive that?
They can, because in Okazaki and Ojoa, they've got players who can score goals as well. You know, it hasn't just... Remember, there was a period where Jamie Vardy wasn't scoring and they still were grinding out victories. Look, there was going to be one game in the title running where Leicester didn't win. There might still be more. You know, they might slip up in another game or draw.
They've got Swansea next,
you know, and if Vardy is going to miss a game, then Swansea's perhaps not the worst one to miss with the way they've been playing of late. I think they've still got enough in the locker to see the season out. And a lot's been made about Vardy and the sending off and the reaction. I don't mind seeing that from him. You know, look, it's probably not ideal to be jabbing a finger in the referee's face, but if he just walked off meekly and mildly, having been sent off at this stage of the season when that Premier League title is so close, you know, they can see it, and to not have that sort of emotional reaction to it, I'd be wondering, I'd be thinking there was probably not quite wired up exactly how I would want my centre forward to be wired up. So it's not great to see, but I think we can forgive him for it.
Mm-hmm. And you're quite happy with the way that, you know, someone like Ranieri can keep a lid on all that stuff?
Yeah, I think so. There's no evidence to suggest he's suddenly going to implode now. I thought it was actually a decent point. West Ham are a good team.
Yeah.
West Ham are a very good team. And they will cause better teams than... Well, there aren't any better teams than Leicester, I suppose, this season. But they have caused a lot of... Look at their away results this season. Early in the season when they set the standard. I think that's a really, really good point to have claimed. And actually, the nature in which they did it in the end will actually inspire them going into the last few games. If Swansea play like they did at Newcastle when they go to the King Power Stadium, then that's another 3 points to Leicester, really.
I think that point that Leicester took, until Tottenham have played their game in hand, you don't know how good it is. If Tottenham lose the game in hand against Stoke...
It's a point gained.
It's a point gained, and they're another step towards the title.
And Spurs have had that sort of character to respond, because they just... It's like someone chasing a bus, isn't it? You know, they get close to jumping on it, and then the bus goes away
just
again.
Just pulls down to the next stop. I mean, but it's interesting. We were talking to Christian Eriksen on Friday for some interviews that we ran in the paper at the weekend, and you know, he was saying that in that side they've got himself, Vertonghen, Alderweireld. They're all in this position before with Ajax back in, I think it was 2010, 2011, and the following season they were trailing Twente, and it went down to the last day of the season, and they ended up beating Twente to lift the Eredivisie title. So, you know, they've got players who have been in this position before, and he said, you know, the position we're in at the moment, chasing is actually better than being on top, but of course there comes a certain point where there is a cut-off, and you say, actually, we now need to be in that position. Mm. So I think the next two results are probably crucial for Tottenham.
OK, and you know, obviously that you've got Leicester and Spurs players featuring very heavily in the Player of the Year voting. One name's not on there, Sergio Aguero. Pellegrini's not happy with that. You saw him play on Saturday, both of you. What do you think?
Well, he was untouchable Saturday. His strike rate is staggering. Goals per game is absolutely ridiculous. He's done it consistently over his time in England, 5 years, whatever it is. The only thing I can think of that he doesn't get voted in is that the votes are cast in one of those while he's having one of those mid-season lulls through injury, which seemed to happen quite a lot, because he is a phenomenon.
The record, as it stood on Saturday night, was that he'd scored 21 goals, which before Vardy scored on Sunday, he was on the same number, and it had taken Aguero 7 fewer games to get there. So that just shows the mark of the man. You know, and as Dom says, you know, the amount of football that he's again missed this season through injury, that can be the only reason that people you know, think that the consistency is perhaps not there, when clearly it is.
What about the runners and riders from Leicester? There's a theory that because there are several candidates, you know, there'll be a split vote.
Yeah. Well, I have voted for a Leicester player for the FWA awards. I voted for Mahrez on the basis that I think he was the inspiration, both in terms of goals and assists. There are great cases for Jamie Vardy, obviously, with the record earlier the season. But also, as a broadsheet, I think I'm obliged to actually point out Kante as well, because defensive midfielders, apparently we're obsessed with them on the broadsheets. But yeah, he's just been an absolute beast in midfield and picked up again for it at a snip. But Mahrez, for me, just, I know he's gone off the ball a bit recently, but he's just been magnificent.
And what about for you, Tom?
Well, I wouldn't go for Mahrez, because I think he's lacked consistency over the course of the whole season. For me, I'm going to vote for Jamie Vardy. Not done it yet. I will do, though, because he, you know, his goals, the record, that was what really set Leicester up and put them in a position where people thought, hang on a minute, they have got something about them, they could go all the way here. And then he did have a little bit of a lull, but he's come back with those two goals against Sunderland, then another goal at the weekend. He's now scoring at the business end. Yes, he's going to miss one game, maybe two, but for me, he's been the story of the season.
Well, there's so many worthy candidates. I'm going for N'Golo Five Lungs Kante. Thanks for joining us here on Life's a Pitch.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.